Hi, my name is Amanda Panacea, and you're listening to the Healer Revolution podcast. This is a community for self-healers, biohackers, practitioners, and any other helping professionals. You're in the right place if you're seeking conversations about how pain becomes passion, the connection between physical, energetic, mental, and our spiritual self, finding your body's ancient wisdom, the latest biohacking technologies, clinical research, and if you just want to nerd out about complex biochemistry and quantum physics. But this is also for entrepreneurs who seek infinite abundance and a supportive community. So pour a cup of King Coffee or Sistis Tea and let's join the revolution. All right, everyone, we are live. This is the Healer Revolution podcast. I am your host, Amanda Panacea, and this is going to be a solo podcast. I don't do a lot of these, but I am very inspired to start getting my voice out there with the massive amount of knowledge that I have. So if you guys are not familiar with my story, just a little recap. I became a licensed counselor when I was about 24, 25. And I did this because I really wanted to help people feel better, right? So I grew up in West Virginia and I had a great childhood. I was outside, I played sports. I was a competitive swimmer. But I grew up around a lot of alcohol use and I just kind of always felt like, why is the rest of the world getting to experience all these things? And West Virginia is pretty isolated. Not a lot changes. Let's face it, nothing changes very much there. And so I really wanted to explore and experience things that were outside of my little circle of family and friends. And I just always had this deep sense that life could be better. Like it doesn't have to be as hard as I felt like I was seeing in other people. And then after a short stint in psychiatric hospitals and working in these higher levels of care, I was burning the F out. My hair was falling out. I was in crisis all of the time because I was in the admissions department of psychiatric hospitals. So literally every person was in crisis. They were suicidal, homicidal, dealing with drug or alcohol addiction, detoxing, psychosis. And my nervous system was a disaster. I was in fear for my life several times a day, all day long. After that, I decided to go to get another master's in functional medicine because I had already been down that rabbit hole. I always loved holistic healing from a young age. Since being a competitive swimmer, we did a lot of like what I would consider biohacking before it was biohacking. And so I always loved that aspect of health. Like if I'm sitting here changing my diet or doing XYZ to help with how I'm emotionally feeling, why aren't we doing this in these psychiatric hospitals? Why aren't we doing this in therapy? And then after that, the degree in functional medicine, towards the end, I was the most physically and mentally unwell that I had ever been. I was struggling with mast cell activation from mold illness, and I had had hepatitis A right before I was exposed to mold. So I was struggling with like liver and kidney health. And then of course, panic attacks started to set in after mold illness. I started developing rashes all over my entire body, and my self-esteem was in the toilet. So through that whole process, I then dove even deeper into this realm of healing. And you name it, I've tried it. I did all the expensive testing. I did all the expensive interventions and biohacks. I've tried every single diet. I even went full carnivore for a while I was in topical steroid withdrawal, which is its own horrific hell where your skin just melts and peels off of your body. And it was during that where I was like, how am I just getting worse and worse? Like, what is it about me that has played a part in my own suffering? And it was through that aspect where I really got deep into the science of psychoneuroimmunology, which I was already familiar with, but also subconscious work and really taking a deep inventory and look at who I was being and how I was contributing to this massive health crash. And so after years and years, it's been about 5 years since that all started, the illness all started, and about 3 years since I've really been deep in this emotional healing space, even though I was already a counselor. I like to tell people that in my master's program, which was around 2009 to 2011, the words nervous system were not spoken. We did not learn about the nervous system. We barely even touched base on how the brain works. I remember we had a small little textbook. It wasn't like a full textbook. It was like a short read, and it was all about amino acids for brain health. And that was in my master's program for counseling. Now in functional medicine, we did a little bit more education on that. Plus it was more recent, but I just like to bring that up because all of the information that's coming out right now about stress and somatics and the explosion of healing modalities on social media, this is all new. Even though a lot of this information might have been out, it wasn't integrated into educational programs at that time when I was going to school. So my topic today is all about how stress can make us sick. And I could literally probably ramble on about various topics or about various aspects of this. So I'm going to try to keep it in a general flow. And the reason I want to talk about this is because you hear this everywhere, right? It's stress, it's chronic stress. The stress will kill you faster than the bacteria, or, you know, all the things that we hear these days. I have also studied German New Medicine, which is an understanding of how our body actually responds to specific types of stressors and how bacteria and fungus and the way that our cells actually will either proliferate or they will, so they'll either grow, that we will get more cells in our body, or we will use bacteria and fungi to lessen the amount of cells in our body, slough them off basically. And learning that was super fascinating because it helps to understand, okay, when I go through something that's really emotionally stressful, I most likely will have a shift in my body, and a resolution of that stressor may lead to some sort of symptom or infection. But the body is just doing its thing. It's going to go through the phases and it's going to be resolved at the end. So I won't go super deep into German New Medicine, but everything I learned by learning German New Medicine also lined up with what I knew to be true from things like functional medicine, psychoneuroimmunology, and trauma work, and all of that. So to start out, stress, what is it? Well, stress is whatever you perceive to be stressful. So what I perceive to be hard or difficult for myself is going to be different than what you perceive to be hard or difficult for yourself. Now, there are certain things that are going to be inherently stressful for most people. You know, as a therapist, we learned a lot of different tools for checking off little boxes. Is this person experiencing this known stressor? Because if they are, we'll know, okay, they've got a lot on their plate. That could be why they're having these symptoms of depression or anxiety or sleep issues or mood swings or whatever the thing. And on those lists are going to be things like death of a loved one, divorce, loss of a job, severe financial issues, physical illness, you know, the things that we know are stressful. Everybody kind of can agree that they're stressful, but what we also know from looking at studies from those who have experienced trauma is that those who have experienced more big T traumas do not actually become more resilient. They actually become more sensitive to stress. And this is simply because our nervous system works really well. This is why we are all still alive as a species, is because our nervous system, quote unquote, is like an umbrella term, will remember that we went through this major stressor. And therefore, it's going to be more hypervigilant for similar situations. So the way that that kind of works is that we experience something as a child, and thinking about a development of the human brain, before the age of 7, they say that you are just taking everything as truth. You are not really questioning anything. You're just taking everything in as you experience it. And that is the way things are. You don't know that people lie per se. You don't understand that other people are going through their own stuff. You have this extremely narcissistic view of the world as you are supposed to in that stage of development. And your goal in these first early stages is literally just attunement, attachment, and, you know, exploring. We call this exploratory orienting, where you're trying to figure out how the world is, how your body works. And then your attunement to your parent, basically how well they're watching you and can they support you when you feel big emotions? Can they not calm you down, but can they sit with you while you experience those big emotions? And before the age of 7, that's all happening. Now, after 7, it's not like that. Those phases stop. We just move into other phases of development where our sense of self and then developing our identity starts, and then puberty. And, you know, we learn how to rebel and to ask questions, et cetera, et cetera. However, back to how our nervous system is developing. So we have these early childhood perceptions of, okay, well, when I came to show my mom my homework that I got an A+ on, and she was crying, and it scared me because I was really happy and I didn't know what to do. And she couldn't say good job to me because she was crying, or she said good job to me, but it didn't feel like she meant good job. And then my mom is not maybe a reliable source for, you know, mirroring back how I'm feeling. Or another great example is if you grew up in a house with chaos, or somebody with mental health issues or substance abuse issues, or fighting and things like that, and you have a big emotion, you have a lot of anger or sadness. Let's say like you cut your finger on something and it scares you, you're bleeding, you don't know about how to stop blood yet. So you run to your parent, but they're yelling and screaming at you because the cut you got was from a broken vase. Your nervous system will remember, oh, okay, well, my caregiver is not able to attune to me to give me the support and comfort that I need. Therefore, I must not show my emotions. These must not be allowed. Or if a parent leaves on business trips, or your parents get divorced, and you start to make that mean something must be wrong with me, I must be unlovable. And these are the types of beliefs, these core wounds, even if they're like small situations, like the finger cutting. If that happens in that situation, there's most likely going to be more situations that kind of mirror that though. But even it doesn't have to be big giant T traumas. Our nervous systems are constantly adapting to everything that has happened to us, especially in those first early years of childhood. And your nervous system is remembering every single thing that's ever happened to you. So through the framework of our senses, sight, sound, touch, taste, smell, we are taking in sensory data. And that sensory data is our nervous system. Your skin is your nervous system. The felt sense, how you're feeling, is your nervous system. You know that you are hungry because of your senses, the sensory data that you are now perceiving. You know when you're hurt or when something's too hot by your sensory data. So that is your nervous system. And then it is going, messages are sending, are getting sent to the amygdala and then to the hypothalamus. And this hypothalamus is in the limbic system of the brain, which we hear a lot in chronic illness, like with brain retraining programs, you have to do these limbic system rewiring programs. But in that limbic system is like the Rolodex of everything that you've ever experienced, everything that has ever happened. And the bad stuff is at the very front, because we have to always make sure that the worst things that have ever happened to us will never happen again, by making sure they're in the front, and we will scan for that stuff first. So if there is any sensory data that even remotely resembles those painful, hard, difficult, scary things that happened to us in childhood, but also in adulthood, then we are always going to be going into even a mild sympathetic activation, which is that stress response. And so this is why, you know, you may think, oh, everything, you know, when I personally was robbed at gunpoint on a very safe street in a wealthy neighborhood, businesses were still open. You could see people walking down the street still. And it honestly was not the scariest thing that had happened to me that day. I had been working in a psychiatric hospital, and I was so shut down. Not only did I chase the people in my car, but I also calmly called 911 when I finally made it back home. And luckily I still had my car keys, but when I finally made it back home, calmly called 911, it sounded like I was ordering a pizza for delivery. I had no fear in my voice. And this is because the nervous system, when you're in that chronic stress state, it can only take so much. It's, you start to collapse. It starts to go into that functional freeze, where this is where you're still functioning, but you are disassociated from the body, or you are in this dorsal vagal collapse where you, it's hard. You are fatigued. It's hard to get going. And so all of the energy is drained from your emotions, and it's just to kind of power the body to make it through. And so when your nervous system, when your brain is remembering all of the things that have ever happened to you, even though that situation for me was not that stressful compared to the other things that happened to me that day. Let's say if I drove on that street and I thought, oh, that's funny. This is where I've been a million times. That only happened one out of the 100 times I had been on that street. You start to feel a little anxious, or you start to get a flashback of that event, but also that event is connected to a neural pathway that also is connected to how I felt in that moment, which is connected to a neural pathway to all the other things that happened to me that day that were terrifying, which is connected to a neural pathway of the belief systems of that I can never rest. I have to stay on high alert. And because us as humans have a confirmation bias, what happens is we have these belief systems, and everything that happens in our life reconfirms these belief systems from when we were a small child. And that is kind of what like subconscious work is unraveling these neural pathways that are connected to these old belief systems that logically make no sense to us, but we are subconsciously believing it and acting it out every day and confirming it in everything that happens to us. I had an amazing mentor that explained that we were born into this world. We were pure and whole, and we didn't have trust issues, and we didn't have self-esteem issues. And we explored and we played, and we trusted our bodies, and we trusted our caregivers, and we trusted other people. And then there was one situation, maybe in the first day of life, maybe in the first year, but at some point there was a situation that broke our trust. And it could be as simple as laying in bed for a little too long without the parent coming because they didn't hear you. The baby monitor was turned off. But because of that growing underdeveloped brain started to think, I am all alone. Nobody is coming for me. And it's probably because I'm not good enough. And that in itself is the break in trust. The first time you ever felt like the world is different than I thought. I can't trust other people. Therefore, I can't trust myself because, hey, here I was trusting all these people and I was wrong. And so after that, because we have that confirmation bias, we see that we see that wound in everything that we do. And this is why we repeat these huge patterns as we go through life, because we will always seek out reasons and ways to confirm these old belief systems. And this is why the quote, if we don't understand the subconscious, it will rule most of your life and you will call it fate. I probably butchered that, but that helps to explain why that makes sense. So why am I talking about the nervous system? Well, because when it comes to stress, there is nothing more inherently stressful than constantly feeling inadequate, constantly feeling like you're bad or wrong or unlovable, constantly feeling like you can't trust anyone and you're on your own and you have to do everything yourself, and or people always abandon you, which will feel like you are going to die. So everybody has kind of a combination of the categories of core wounds. And these are driving not only how we see the world, but also the behaviors that we take, the behaviors that we don't take, the relationships that we get in, the careers that we get into. You know, I'm a big advocate for from pain to passion, which is kind of the goal with this podcast, is to highlight these stories of how pain turned into passion and being in the helping field or healing field and giving back to people who may be in similar situations as you, you know, before you finally overcame this big obstacle. And I do believe that we all are on our own path and we need the pain in order to also feel the pleasure. But for those of us who have been through these big, giant, hellish years, dark nights of the soul, where you literally feel like I have to become a whole new person. Everything I thought about myself was a lie and my entire personality was a trauma response. Learning how and why that happened, according to how stressed that you are, is very, very important to not repeating these same patterns. And so in a nutshell, I'll just kind of summarize how stress makes us sick. It's a variety of ways. Physically, high cortisol. So if you are feeling like you have to achieve to be better because you always feel not good enough, and you've got this high cortisol, you constantly overbook yourself so you don't have to feel feelings, because in your household, you were told that you cannot feel your feelings indirectly, maybe by parents not having space for it, or maybe from the lack of attachment or neglect that you got from caregivers. And so we've got this chronically high cortisol, which is our stress hormone. Over time, cortisol, you will start to become more resistant to cortisol. Our cells can become resistant to things like cortisol, just like they can to insulin. So everybody knows of insulin resistance. This is highly studied and well-known phenomenon of our cells. Cortisol resistance can happen as well. We can have this poor cellular effect of cortisol. And so maybe we have the high cortisol still, or people in functional medicine talk about adrenal fatigue, where your adrenals produce less cortisol. And then that was debunked and everyone says, no, it's mitochondria dysfunction. But what are mitochondria? They are the part of the cell that is taking a molecule of glucose and turning it into energy. So we have like the Krebs cycle, and then we have the electron transport chain or cellular respiration, which is a mineral and nutrient, mineral, B vitamins, oxygen, CoQ10. So it's a nutrient dependent process that takes these nutrients and moves the electrons around in a sense, and turns that molecule of glucose into energy. And so that whole process is happening in the mitochondria. And we need minerals, we need oxygen, we need B vitamins, we need nutrients for this enzymatic process, this passing of the electron down the chain to happen. And then we also need energy to do that. And we need a healthy cell that's allowing glucose into the cell. So we need sodium and potassium. We need the sodium and potassium pump, this electrical gradient of our cell wall, to be healthy. And guess what sodium and potassium are controlled by? They're controlled by these adrenal hormones, aldosterone and cortisone. And without healthy adrenals or without healthy amounts of those hormones being made, then guess what? We don't have healthy ratios of sodium and potassium, which can impact more than just the cell walls and welcoming glucose into the cell. It can impact getting waste out of the cell. It can impact welcoming in thyroid hormones. So now we've got metabolism symptoms, core body temperature lowered, cold hands and feet, dry skin, dry hair, constipation, which is going to start to clog up your drainage pathways. And you can see, if we don't have a healthy cell, we don't have these nutrients to make energy, then we will not efficiently make energy. And part of this cell process also includes leaking of electrons if we do not have an electron to pair with it. And that leaking of electrons is reactive oxygen species or oxidative stress. And so when we're stressed, it's going to affect our minerals. We might burn through the electrolytes. We'll burn through B vitamins, all of which are important for that process. And then those are going to also make us more susceptible to other mineral imbalances and nutrient imbalances, because everything is connected. Everything has an antagonist and a synergist. Our body works in this balance of movement. Nothing is ever totally still. Everything is always moving. And so things are constantly getting passed around. We need a balance of minerals versus other minerals, but also amino acids versus vitamins, and et cetera, et cetera. So it's this complex kind of dance that's always happening. So with that, chronic stress is going to come high cortisol. Long periods of time, we can deplete our electrolytes and B vitamins, which are important for making energy. So now you've got blood sugar issues, poor thyroid, because we can't welcome thyroid hormone into the cell. Thyroid also needs minerals to function and also to convert thyroid hormone. And then back to high cortisol. So high cortisol over a short period of time is how our stress response was designed to work. We create cortisol and adrenaline to survive the stressor. That high cortisol over long periods of time also takes with it higher glucose into the blood, because we also need glucose for energy because we have to survive the stressor. And then we've got high insulin. And then again, we're kind of back at insulin resistance long periods of time. Cortisol, once we go into that resistance to cortisol is very important for our circadian rhythms. It's supposed to be high and spike in the morning when we see light, and lower at night, where melatonin is going to start to rise when cortisol starts to lower, and melatonin is going to rise in response to darkness. And so then we've got sleep issues. Also, cortisol is very important for immune function and as an anti-inflammatory agent of our immune system. So with cortisol resistance often comes lots more allergies, lots of inflammation, pain, and leaky gut, especially when our electrolytes, sodium and potassium, are depleted as well. Sodium is really, really important for creating stomach acid. And if sodium is really low, then we have poor gut function. With the lowering of electrolytes, then we're more susceptible to things like heavy metal toxicity. Because if we do not have a mineral to put into the receptor site for an enzyme, guess what? We've got tons of aluminum. We've got tons of mercury coming in from the environment and other heavy metals. They're going to slip right into that receptor site. So depleted minerals equals more accumulation of heavy metal toxicity, which is going to steal receptor sites for things like zinc and phosphorus, which are super important for gut function and making stomach acid and digesting proteins. So now we've got poor gut function. We've got inflammation in the gut, less stomach acid. So then we've got more yeast overgrowth, more parasites, more bacteria overgrowth. We've got more food allergies because our gut is leaky and we're starting to develop cortisol resistance. On top of that, when the gut starts to become really inflamed, it's going to send the messages back up the gut-brain axis to the brain to say, hey, we've got this big issue going on. We're stressed down here. The vagus nerve is also involved in coming out of the stress response to going into that parasympathetic activation. And it's the main connection between the brain and the gut. The vagus nerves also lower heart rate, and the vagus nerves also help control inflammation through the cholinergic pathway. And so if we've got tons of gut inflammation, this can impair vagal tone. And then also it's kind of like a muscle. If we're really good at going into fight or flight and we stay there most of the time, freeze, which is also a combination of fight, flight, and that shutdown dorsal vagal branch of the vagus nerve, we're kind of chronically having this sympathetic activation. The vagus nerve is not going to do very well in ventral vagal, safe, calm, happy, connected, laughing, playful state because it does not have enough strength to stay in that state. Or subconsciously, we've got these beliefs that are saying it's not safe to be in this state because we trusted that person, we trusted that person, we trusted those people, and they broke our trust. So we don't even want to go there because it's unsafe to be in a nice, relaxed, calm, happy state. We want to stay over here in hypervigilance because this feels better because at least we can have some small sense of control about how we are trying to prevent bad things from happening again. So now moving on to the liver. This chronically stressed state, the immune system and the liver are going to think, well, we don't really need to detox from this chemical. We don't really need to fight off this bacterial infection. We don't really need to kill off this parasite overgrowth. We need to survive. And so these, a lot of functions of our immune system literally shift. All of these functions of detox, they are not as important. They get moved on to the back burner. And when your immune system shifts, the whole study of this is that psychoneuroimmunology, where something that affects your hormones, like stress hormones, something that affects your belief systems and how you perceive the world to be, how you make it mean about you, all of that impacts how your immune system is functioning. And all of this is so well documented, and we have studied it time and time again. There's a really great study that's very old about, it's a rabbit study, so you know I love it because I had a bunny. And it's about they were studying rabbits and the control group versus the non-control group. One of them was given poison, and the man who was supposed to be administering it to them, he, I guess, felt really bad. And so he hugged and cuddled the bunnies and loved them. And when he was giving them the poison, and what they found was that they were like, these bunnies are not as bad off as we thought they were going to do. And they found out later that he was, you know, being really nice to them and cuddling them. And that actually made a huge difference in the the entire study because the bunnies actually did very well despite getting the poison, which goes to show you that the amount of stress that your body is in, the amount of attunement or support, the amount of time that you're in that ventral vagal branch of the vagus nerve, that conversational, looking at people's faces, happy, connected, the more we spend time in that, the less impact toxicity is going to have on us, because we can actually detox, mobilize, our body can function properly. And when we're in this chronically stressed state, downstream effects is that it just does not detox and move things out as efficiently as it would if we were not as stressed. Other aspects that can affect our health, the chronically high cortisol, this HPA activation is, so we've got gut health, we've got liver, we've got immune system, we've got cellular health, blood sugar. And then therefore, once you become insulin resistant, you've got this metabolic syndrome happening, fatty liver, as well as cholesterol and blood pressure issues. And then also the skin. So the skin has receptor sites for cortisol. It's got its own HPA access. And if you have a skin issue, then oftentimes they will get much worse or flare when you are in a more stressed state. I can definitely attest to that. Also, the skin is literally your nervous system. You sense everything from your skin. Imagine not having skin and only being able to get sensations from internally. Also, the skin and your nervous system are from the same cells from in utero. So what cells replicate into your nervous system also replicate into your skin, which is really fascinating. Then coming back to our electrolyte imbalances, those can impact things like kidney function, blood pressure, which can also kind of go hand in hand with the stress response. We can also start to see issues in the bladder. When I often see on bioresonance, the bladder resonating when somebody maybe is more stuck in the freeze response. We also, through stress and trauma, see that people will use calcium as like a buffer. And this is something that I went through. It's called the calcium shell. And I'm coming out of it the last couple of years, working on this through mineral balancing programs and all of this nervous system, emotional and trauma work. But the calcium shell is basically when your brain logically is like, we have to slow this person down. They're going too hard, too fast for too long. So we're going to start taking calcium, which is very relaxing if you were to take it. Calcium and magnesium. Most people know magnesium, but calcium and magnesium are these very nice calcium is a very strong, sturdy mineral. And so we will take it out of the bones and teeth where most of it needs to go. And we're going to deposit it in soft tissue. And now this can be calcification of not just a gland like the pineal gland, but calcification of our arteries, calcification of the gallbladder. You can start to deposit calcium in all sorts of places in the body. You can also develop kidney stones made of calcium oxalate crystals. And so there's just a whole host of things that happen when we are in this chronically stressed state. And maybe from chronic beliefs of worthiness or these core wounds that we were just mentioning. But now also, we are also all in this chronically stressed state because of our lifestyle. So I'm sitting here at night. I'm in my red and pink room with my blue blockers on and my full spectrum light bulb. And even now, this is too late to be really using a computer with all of these bright lights on me. But I wanted to get this out there. But in general, Our lifestyle is so much more stressful now because we are products of this earth. We are made to thrive on this earth, and we only thrived and evolved because of our involvement with nature. And now that we are all so far away from that, we are not touching the ground with our feet. We're not in light and sunlight. We are not eating food that came from this earth anymore either. We are chronically in these dark technology, EMF it's like environments, and we wonder why we're getting sick. We have known forever that shift workers who sleep during the day and work at night have a shorter lifespan and develop more cancers. And so finding some sort of schedule to get out into the sun, to touch the earth, to be outside, to breathe natural, normal, clean air, to drink clean water. We have to filter our water now because that is destroyed. To eat actual food, all of those things are just foundational ways that you can start to feel better immediately. And it doesn't have to be complicated. Just getting outside a couple times a day. I like to take light breaks where I step out onto the balcony. And just like after every single call, I step out there, I ground myself, I start to feel what it feels like to be in my body at that very moment. And I just take in the light because we have these receptors in our eyes that go directly into parts of our brain that start to tell our body what hormones to make, what neurotransmitters to make, what digestive enzymes to make. Everything is signaled from this light, just the same as our nervous system is signaled from danger versus not danger. And part of being in a more relaxed state is making sure your body knows what time of day it is. Because if you just keep it in a dark box all day and flood it with light that only has this certain spectrum of light frequencies, then it's not going to know, and it's going to be stressed because it's not getting any information to know what it's supposed to be doing. Imagine going to work and they just throw you into a new job, or let's say you get a new job and they just don't teach you what to do. They just throw you in. That's how your body feels when it doesn't know what time of day it is. So this is another reason we are all just overly stressed. So light, food, nature, and then doing inner belief work, figuring out where those subconscious blocks are. I teach all of this stuff, how to do your own emotional work and trauma work. In my programs, I have the How to Feel course, which is my biggest program. It's my favorite because it is literally all the stuff I know, how to really start to self-regulate and come out of like freeze response or chronic fight or flight. As well as my personalized five-step process, which I have taken my favorite bits and pieces from all sorts of different modalities and theories and neuroscience and clinical data to make this simple five-step process that you can do on your own every day, several times a day if you need. It can be short and sweet, or you can lengthen it out and really go deep. And then I also have my stress reset course, which is 11 total sessions of some of my favorite techniques. It doesn't have the education pieces like How to Feel does. So the stress reset is great if you're like, okay, I know why I'm like this. I've got that awareness. Now I just want some of the tools. And then also, of course, I have my one-on-one transformation coaching, where we go into things like the subconscious work. We do things like theta healing, which is an energy healing modality, which is the best, in my opinion, way to dig for the bottom most impactful beliefs and core wounds. I also incorporate German New Medicine, as well as I'm trained in EMDR, EFT tapping, and a few other somatic healing, body-based exercises, somatic experiencing. All of these are really core to the type of work that I do and are all incorporated into the five-step process that I've created. So I hope this was helpful. Thank you guys so much for listening. Have a wonderful weekend. Thank you. Thank you, everyone. I am just so thrilled that you're listening to the Healer Revolution podcast. This has been a huge passion project for me and super therapeutic on top of that, helping me to use my voice and connect with other like-minded individuals. So if you're enjoying the podcast, please like and subscribe. Please share on social media or with your audience or friends or loved ones. I truly appreciate it. It does take a lot of time and financial costs to run the podcast, and it is not a moneymaker, let me tell you. So if you are enjoying this, I would truly appreciate your support just by sending me a post, a like, and a subscribe. Thank you so much.